That brings us down to question number six, and we'll start off with Duncan Fields. Duncan, question number six. Senate Bill 91 addressed issues surrounding corrections reform and corresponding savings for the state of Alaska. Unintended consequences of the reduction of pretrial incarceration have resulted in downtown Kodiak facing increased petty crime by individuals, often under the influence of alcohol or drugs, with little recourse for local law enforcement. Recently, Governor Walker said the administration is aware of the unintended consequences of this bill and is working to address those issues. What amendments would you suggest?
Thank you, Cliff. Indeed, what we were told was a criminal justice reform bill has become a crime-enabling act. And it transfers a lot of the costs of the changes onto the business owners downtown in terms of broken windows and other kinds of vandalism. It transfers the costs onto us as citizens in our sense of being safe. The fundamental role of government is to provide safety to its citizens. When you don't feel safe in downtown Kodiak, we've failed. This bill needs to be revisited. Why the legislature passed it in the first place is beyond me. There was not a single law enforcement agency anywhere in the state, as far as I know, that supported it. I know they didn't in Kodiak. The district attorneys all said it's a bad idea. VPSOs opposed it. Why did the legislature pass it? Only to now say, gee, we made a mistake. It's going to be hard to fix. Certainly the inability of the police to put people that are open containers or public and disorderly or minor drug offenses behind bars has significant adverse consequences to our communities, and they need to be changed. I think we also need to look at some of the drug sentencing changes. This bill was a bill to save us money. Fewer people in prison, less dollars for incarceration. Great goal. This bill is going to cost us money in terms of transferring those costs to U.S. citizens. It has to be changed. Thank you.
Thank you, Duncan. Louise, would you like that question repeated?
Yes, please.
Okay. Question number six. Senate Bill 91 addressed issues surrounding the corrections reform and corresponding savings for the state of Alaska. Unintended consequences of the reduction of pretrial incarceration have resulted in downtown Kodiak facing increased petty crime by individuals, often under the influence of alcohol or drugs, with little recourse for local law enforcement. Recently, Governor Walker said the administration is aware of the unintended consequences of this bill and is working to address those issues. What amendments would you suggest?
Well, first of all, I would say that the legislature is perceiving this as a work in progress. This bill was passed. It was passed with the support of every branch of government, which is pretty unusual for any bill, from the executive branch to the Alaska criminal justice system, the Senate, and the House. The main problem that it solves is 40% of our prison population right now are pre-trial individuals. They are individuals that are in jail and have not been convicted of anything. They're waiting for their hearings, but they can't be bailed out. That's the largest growing population in our jails and has been for the last 10 years. So, and these are, most of them are nonviolent criminals. You can't, and we are supporting them. This addresses that. This also provides for $99 million in money for rehab for alcohol, drug, those type of programs. One of my amendments would be that we just vacated the Palmer Prison. What a perfect place for a rehab. The state owns that property. We can institute something right there. And that's what we need to do, rather than having a revolving door in our jails for these people that are downtown, that you pick them up and you put them in jail and you let them sober up and they're out there, you know, within 24 hours. It's a revolving door and it's the same thing. So that would be my First Amendment.
Thank you, Representative Soots. Brent, would you like to have the question repeated?
No, sir. Thank you. Representative Stutz is correct. The Palmer Correctional Institute would make a great start on building the rehab facilities in our state. This is something that's sorely lacking. The bill is intended as a stopgap measure, and the backside of the blade was a bit more catastrophic than I think they're allowing for. The job of law enforcement is not supposed to be mental health and rehabilitation, yet we pile more and more onto the police's plate. We need to let them get back to doing basic police work. And we need to develop a better way to address the addiction and mental health problems that are in the state and ravaging it. The Palmer facility is a good place to start. We need to make it more accessible around the state so that when people get the need, the urge to go to rehab, that it is available, that there isn't a six-month wait for them to get there. It needs to be available when it's needed at all levels of the community, and we need to work harder to accomplish that. Thank you.
Thank you, Brent. And that brings us down to question number 7, and we'll start out with Representative Stutz. The question is, every time Alaska Department of Fish and Game Comfish budget is cut, we lose research and management programs that allow for harvest opportunity. The result is fewer jobs, less income, and fewer fish with which to pay taxes to the state. How would you balance the loss of funding to the fish and game comfish budget with the department's ability to manage our fishery resources?
Well, what I would do, comfish actually, you hear that they don't pay their own way, but they do in fact pay their own way when you take into consideration the taxes that they pay to their local communities. In this state, you cannot dedicate tax dollars, but you most certainly can designate tax dollars. And I would set up a fund where dollars that are, I would like to see set up, that dollars that are created by the comfish industry go back into the comfish industry. That's critical. We have a department, the Commercial Fishery Entry Commission, and it has currently, it creates in excess of about $2 million a year. Those dollars can be directed to the Department of Fish and Game if the Commercial Fishery Entry Commission were streamlined in a manner that would be accordingly. That would be my number one concern. It is a huge concern, because when you cut our Department of Fish and Game, you are cutting our ability to maintain our renewable resource. And we have to remember that. Our fisheries are renewable, unlike our oil. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stutz. Brent, question that goes next to you, would you like it repeated?
Please, sir.
Question number 7. Every time the Alaska Department of Fish and Game comfish budget gets cut, we lose research and management programs that allow for harvest opportunity. The result is fewer jobs, less income, and fewer fish with which to pay taxes to the state. How would you balance the loss of funding to the fish and game comfish budget with the department's ability to manage our fishery resources?
Well, sir, as we've developed our downtown and added a convention center and continue to add more hotel space, we'll be able to promote this and a wide variety of other conventions to come into town. This will boost our business and tax base and help put funds back into all of these programs that we need. If we think with an open mind and look in the odd corners of our town, we can build a solid budget to fund these projects.
Thank you. Mr. Fields, would you like the question repeated?
No, I've got the question, Cliff. Thank you. I've worked with Fish and Game for 30 years. The cuts that have occurred in the last legislative session are unconscionable. Fish and Game and the management of our natural resources for sustained yield is a constitutional mandate. It's different here in Alaska than in other states. Constitutional mandate, and we've cut it by 30% in the last legislative session. We can't cut anymore. It's not a matter of balancing. It's a matter of stopping. We have to stop the cuts to Fish and Game. The conversation relative to dedicate or designate is a clever conversation, but it's not a realistic conversation. We designate funds from an aquaculture association because the fishermen pay those funds into account, and then they're retransferred by appropriation to the legislature. If we move down the road to designate funds from fishing to go to fishing, what's going to stop the oil company from designating all the oil revenues to go back to the oil companies? What's going to stop the mining companies from saying all our funds go to the mining companies? This is a path we cannot go down. Fish and Game needs to be paid by state revenue because it's the largest employer. Our resources need to be protected because it's constitutionally mandated. Once again, as your legislature, I won't balance money in Fish and Game. I'm going to say no more cuts. No more cuts. We can't afford it. And it's not constitutionally permissible. Thank you.
Thank you, Duncan. That brings us down to question number 8. And, Brent, the first question goes to you. The first answer goes to you. And that's Kodiak Island's link to the Alaska highway system is dependent on ferry service through the Alaska Marine Highway System. The Tustamina, after nearly 55 years of service, is being taken out of service for longer periods of time due to its age. However, how do you plan to address the replacement of the Tustamina or its reduced service to our community?
Tustamina is a sentimental old boat for all of us here, but it's an old boat. It's time to replace her. There's no question about reduced service anymore. We can't afford to cut the villages out and that supply line to ourselves. It's one of the most effective and cost-effective ways we can get ourselves around the coastal communities. We're going to need to work hard to bring new boats online, and they're going to need to be better capable to meet the diverse situations we find in the different villages, and we're going to need to be more fuel-efficient and cost-effective. Everything we're talking about is, you know, another price tag, another thing we need to buy, another program we need to fund. We're going to have to make hard choices at some point, but this is not one we can do without. We're going to have to find a way to put more ferries in service.
Thank you. Duncan, next, the question goes to you. Do you have
a question? Please repeat the question, Cliff.
Question number 8. Kodiak's link to the Alaska highway system is dependent on the ferry service through the Alaska Marine Highway System. The Tustamina, after nearly 55 years of service, is being taken out of service for longer periods of time due to its age. How do you plan to address the replacement of the Tustamina or its reduced service to our communities?
Thank you. When Brent was talking about fond Tustamina memories, I remember when it was first built, before it was extended, and it was a fun 12-hour carnival ride to Homer. And I was always a little disappointed they lengthened it, and so it wasn't quite so much fun up there on the top deck. But it is an old boat, and it has to be replaced. I think we're making good progress there. I think the legislature needs to be given some credit for moving that along. 90% or 95% of the cost of replacing the Tustamina will come from federal highway funds, but the state does need to do its share, and I believe it's a priority on our transportation long-term plan and has been a priority for this legislature. So I don't know that there's anything additional to do other than to protect that as a priority and to continue to move forward. Our entire marine highway system, as we know, is under assault. It is disheartening. to hear urban legislators, interior legislators, talk about discontinuing the ferry service. But it's under assault because there's a misconception about what a ferry service is. It's an extension of the highway. And urban legislators put a false requirement that somehow our ferry service should make money or should break even. That's not intended. Does the highway from Palmer to Fairbanks make money? We build that because it supports all economic activity in those two communities. That's why ferry service is essential to rural Alaska. It's not about breaking even or making money. It's about supporting our economies. And we as a state must continue to invest in the extension of the highway of what we call the Marine Highway Service.
Thank you, Duncan. That brings us down to question number...
Louise.
Would you like me to answer? That's all right.
I guess I'm not very
good
at this.
That's all right. It just
I'm
goes
sorry.
To show none of us are
please.
Perfect.
My apologies.
Apology accepted. The legislature has moved forward with the funding of the Tustamina, and we are on track. I think everybody down in Juneau is pretty well aware that this is not a negotiable item any longer. It's a has to be. I'm very fortunate because I was on one of my committees that I was on was transportation, and so I was able to get forward and make very clear that I'm a ferry person. And we had some pretty intense conversations because the chair of our committee was a Valley person. And so when we would talk about raising fuel tax by 8 cents, which has not been raised since 1962, she would say, well, we can't afford it because we have to commute back and forth, and that would cost us money. And I said, well, let me say the same thing that you've said to me. You don't like it? Move to Anchorage. That was her common statement to me when I would start talking about the ferries. It was kind of funny. Well, you can move move where there's no ferries. And I would say, well, careful what you wish for, because we may all be coming your way. Hope you guys can afford us. So, yes, that's exactly. And I think the other thing, as I said before, in the meantime, we need dependable ferry service. We could do with a little less if it's dependable.
Thank you, Louise. We're nearing our break, so we'll take one more question here. And the question is, and we'll start with you, Duncan. The University of Alaska has undergone numerous budget cuts the past few years. How do you propose the university maintain viable programs and services for the students of the University of Alaska?
Thank you, Cliff. I'm grumpy with the University of Alaska. They're trying to close our Fish Tech Center over here, and it just shouldn't be done. We need to prioritize all across Alaska what the educational needs are, and not just the needs of the campuses in Fairbanks and Anchorage. I understand that we have to fund the University of Alaska, but I think that their administrative structure and a number of their decisions are inefficient and need to be revisited. And I think that's why the legislature has been continuing to cut the university and continue to exercise oversight because of some of their activities. One of the things I'm familiar with is we have a school of fishery that's located about 1,500 miles from saltwater. Now it's great to have a lot of classroom work, but if you're getting a BA or an MA in fisheries, you probably ought to spend some time on the water. That school of fisheries should be in Seward or Kodiak or another coastal community rather than in Fairbanks. A lot of the university's programs are research programs. Research is needed. Research is important. But at the secondary level and the university level, we need to talk about applied programs, programs that people coming out with MAs and BAs can go into the industry and affect Alaska for good. Fish and game, for example. You can get a PhD in oceanography, but there's no job for you probably here in Alaska. And I think the university needs to change focus. So I think the university needs to be more sensitive to the needs in rural Alaska. I think it needs more decentralization. And I think that the administrative hierarchy needs to be reviewed. Thank you.
Thank you, Duncan. Representative Stutz, same question. Would you like it repeated? The University of Alaska has undergone numerous budget cuts the past few years. How do you propose the university maintain viable programs and services for the students of the University of Alaska?
Well, we can start with the University of Alaska owns over 600 buildings. I'm not sure that they need to have that many buildings. And I can see them selling quite a few and generating quite a bit of money. I also believe that they need to standardize their credits, their course credits. You can get credits in Fairbanks and transfer down to UAS, and your credits aren't transferable. To me, to have three different systems within one university does not make good sense, and it's expensive, too. It's tough on the students. It just doesn't make good sense. So I would say that those are two good places to start.
Thank you, Louise. Brent, same question. Would you like it repeated?
Please, sir.
The University of Alaska has undergone numerous budget cuts the past few years. How do you propose the university maintain viable programs and services for the students of the University of Alaska?
We're in a unique place. With ocean acidification and climate change, we stand on the threshold of being able to do some of the best research in the world. And this should be something that we build our economy on. We can attract science and scientists from around the world here to do these studies. In doing so, we build a demand for students and would run more people through the university system. We're going to need to look at some of the top-end salaries there. We pay some pretty exorbitant prices to attract people with really nice call lists. Well, they're working in paradise, and that has a financial value, too. We need to start looking at that. They're not working in New York. They're working in Alaska. That's worth something on its own. It's going to be creative thinking. We're going to have to look at all aspects of the budget. Yes, do they need all these buildings? Something we need to look at. It's not going to be easy, but I think if we build research as an export of Alaska, we're moving in the right direction to help fund our universities and keep the programs alive.
Thank you, Brent. That brings us to our five-minute break, and after we come back, we'll have the candidates each asking questions of their two opponents. After that, we'll have closing remarks, and then we'll finish up the program. So we'll take a five-minute break. Thank you.